Hi everyone!
Hello!
This is On.NET, and this week, exceptionally, we are not in the studios. We are back in my office for a week. Today, we have Martin Woodward with us from the .NET Foundation. Hi, Martin.
Hey, everybody. Good to be here. Glad to see .NET Bot behind you. He's looking awesome.
Yeah, we were going to introduce
the
.NET
look?
Bot.
This isn't superimposed. This is physically here.
It exists.
Awesome.
And Kendra is here. Hi, Kendra.
And I'm here too, physically, not superimposed.
Not behind the monitor.
No, yeah.
It's good to see you having to switch as well this week, Kendra. That's nice. It's actually, you don't look like you're all dark and in a cupboard anymore. So this is awesome.
Yep.
Okay.
Out of the cupboard.
Today we are here to talk about the .NET Foundation with Martin. So Martin is what's the title? President, Director?
Executive Director.
Executive Director, very impressive. Yeah, okay, so we should probably first explain what the .NET Foundation is and what it's for, what it's doing for open source .NET projects.
Yeah, sure. That's great. So the .NET Foundation is a non-profit, so a 503c6, which has been set up to really support open source .NET. And we do that in a number of ways. One is we have a software foundation. So we have a number of projects that are actually part of the .NET Foundation. So a lot of the core .NET projects are in there. If you think about, you know, Roslyn and Core CLR and ASP.NET and all those sorts of things. So they're all in the .NET Foundation, along with a bunch of, you know, the community projects that are kind of core and critical to .NET. So everything from Orchard CMS, which you know very well, Bertrand, to Poly joined yesterday, which is a cool retry, you know, exception handling type framework. Cake is part of the .NET Foundation as well. So a lot of these, you know, community innovated projects are also collaborating within. And the idea there is to provide a fairly vendor neutral space by which companies can come and individuals can come together and collaborate on the future of .NET really and try and build it together. We'll talk in a sec about the services that the .NET Foundation provides to projects. But just while we're on what the .NET Foundation is generally, so we have the Software Foundation, and then we also, as part, you know, NuGet is also part of the .NET Foundation. So the whole point of the .NET Foundation is to make sure we have a vibrant and innovative open source ecosystem. So having NuGet is obviously critical to that, you know, for people trying to find open source and trying to get to their libraries and build projects quickly. And then I also do some work just generally talking to open source projects and seeing what we can do to help and seeing if there's any, you know, mentoring or if there's any resources we can provide to individual open source projects and to try and, you know, if we can get more publicity to them and things like that. You don't have to be part of the .NET Foundation for me to want to come and help you. You just have to be doing awesome things and come reach out to me, really.
Oh, interesting. So you're also helping projects that are not formally in the foundation.
Yeah, so because any healthy ecosystem is a diverse one. And one of the things I've been pushing back against a little bit is it's kind of in our community and sort of like the Microsoft community, it's kind of natural to look for who's the one person to go to for everything, you know? And that's a bad thing. We need to get out of that habit. Yes. And so I'm really, just trying to encourage open source in general, you know, not just being part of the foundation. If every large open source project that was involved in .NET was in a .NET foundation, I've probably failed. You know, there probably wants to be some over in Apache. There wants to be some totally independent. There wants to be foundations like the F# Foundation, you know, that are totally dedicated to one little area. That's awesome. That's goodness. The more diverse, the better, really. So,
Yeah, and actually part of that diversity is also having lots of small projects that are actually, you know, just beginning and not yet do not yet have requirements that would justify being in a foundation. I mean, all projects start pretty much that way, right? Except probably a few exceptions, but yeah. So what kind of services, what kind of help would you provide to, you know, a beginning project just to help it be successful?
So when you're a beginning project, the key thing is eyeballs and fingers on keyboards, you know, that's kind of what you want. So go talk to people, do a bit of mentoring, go look at their repository and kind of, you know, give some advice as to how they might want to shape things, how they might want to change things to make the repository more approachable. One of the things I like to talk about a lot is the contribution funnel. So if you imagine this funnel where you've got at the very top the people who are consuming your open source, 98-99% of people will just consume your library or consume your open source component and go away and never come back. And that's fine. That's awesome. That's good. But a tiny percentage of those, say 1%, 1 or 2%, will actually give you some time. That might be talking about your library to their friends. That might be talking about your library in a conference and saying how awesome it is, or blogging about it. That might be raising an issue, you know, giving you, like letting you know what's wrong, or helping out fixing some of your documentation maybe, or, right, you know. Only a small percentage actually give you some time, and you want to be able to maximize the number of those you get, make it as easy as possible for people to consume your project first of all, and then make it as easy as possible to convert a small percentage of those into people who actually give you time. And then when they give you time, you then want to be able to thinking about how you draw them down the contribution funnel, how you turn the people who've given you a little bit of time into giving you code, because that's the ultimate gift. You know, with like talk is cheap, code is what you really want, and fingers on keyboards is what you want. So how do you take how do you make it easy for people to contribute to your project? And it's just basic stuff like have a contributing.md file that tells you how to do issues well, have a file which helps you do pull requests, have a roadmap which explains where you want to go as a project. And then finally, a very, very, very small percentage of the people that give you code, that they'll stick around. And, you know, you want to develop the relationships with those and build them up and make it so that they can then come in and actually start sharing ownership with you, and, you know, have somebody who be able to take on the mantle of your project in the future and drive it forwards long after, you know, day-to-day life gets in the way sometimes, as we all know, as we've all done our own open source projects. You know, sometimes the day job kicks in and you have to go do something else. If you've got somebody helping out, then that's really helpful. Or you know, sometimes we don't live forever and we want open source projects to live on past us. So how do we make sure we have that sustainability, really? So yeah, that's kind of some of the advice. And then help with the mentoring, help trying to get them eyeballs, you know, try and send them along to people like yourself, Bertrand, and this show, or you know, like hook them up and introduce them to people like Carl Franklin and Rich Campbell over at .NET Rocks, and, you know, just generally get the word out about their project if possible. So yeah, that's the general thing I do. Occasionally as well, if they need help with some software, then or if they need help with all the resources, then, you know, we know people, so I can go and help introduce them to the right people that might be able to help them out and try and, you know, support the project in other ways.
Cool. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say that's really good advice.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I would love to do actually is I've been thinking about a format of a, like, not a show or an online show, but maybe a panel at an open source conference or something. Do like open source Shark Tank, or they call it The Apprentice over here, Dragon's Den is what it's called over here in the UK, but yeah, open source Shark Tank, and basically have some projects come in and pitch the project, and then have a few people who've been around give them advice as to how they could, you know, improve their project and how they're going to make it sustainable and things.
Yeah. So, that would be fascinating. That's a great idea.
Let's do that.
We could do that as a regular segment on the show. How about that?
Yeah.
Whoa, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that's a very cool idea. I love that. And I would actually be more comfortable with it if the people giving the advice weren't Microsoft, because that might sound a little,
some diverse panel or something. That'd be really good.
That's the thing, you see. That's one of the great things about the .NET Foundation is we have the advisory council. So, and on there we have a group of people from, like Bill Wagner's on there, who's now Microsoft, but he's heavily involved with things like the humanitarian toolbox and things. He's got a lot of experience. Phil Hack, he's been involved in open source for a long time. Mirko and Sean Walker, who's, one of the original open source .NET people. And they've got a wealth of experience. So when you do come on as a .NET Foundation project, one of the things we do is assign you a mentor. And that's typically either me or one of the people from the .NET Foundation Advisory Council. And again, it's just somebody else who's had experience running open source projects to kind of give you some help and advice and just be somebody else to talk to about your project and about how you might, drive it forwards.
Yeah.
I think I need one of those.
Let's do that. Let's talk about it after the show and get it started. So we've talked about diversity a little bit. I wanted to get your thoughts on, do you think the .NET ecosystem has a diversity problem? And I don't mean a diversity problem in terms of people, actually, although we could also talk about that, but that would be a whole different subject. But more about the way that traditionally the .NET ecosystem has been a lot centered around Microsoft and Microsoft providing one true way of doing this or that, like data access, entity framework, or I don't know. So do you think this is changing and that open source has a big role to play in that, where there is more than one way to skin a cat in .NET and we have a variety of solutions for each problem, so that people can make a choice and do something according to their taste and so on?
Yeah, I think we definitely so we have a selection bias in the .NET community because it's been as long as it's been, with kind of, when Microsoft blesses something, then it becomes the framework, and that's how it's always been. Now, there are parts of the .NET community that don't think like that at all. You've got the whole chocolatey community and people like Gary Park and people. But there are whole parts of it, and there's the whole F# community. They've done that despite Microsoft in many ways. They've really, while there's lots of us who are really, really fans of Microsoft, it's, the investment from the company is nowhere near the level of investment that, say, has gone into something like C#. And yet it's such a huge, vibrant, and full of, really, really interesting ideas, and full of, very passionate people who are doing great, really great stuff. So, I think the diversity is a good thing to encourage. I think we've got a lot of education to do within the community to be cool with that, to be relaxed with that. And that's one of the things I worry about when people come into the foundation, in a way, is worrying that we're giving the impression that we're anointing somebody. So, You were talking, you're talking about Orchard on I can't remember which podcast it was recently, but you were on talking about Orchard somewhere, and the .NET Foundation and things. And one of the, we have two CMSs within the .NET Foundation. We have Orchard and we have Umbraco. That's a good thing. Which one should you pick? Look at both and decide, We have the way for doing builds. We have MS Build for doing builds, and we have a bunch of, project.json stuff right now, and then moving to MS Build. But we also have things like cakebuild.net for helping do cross-platform build scripts. We also have ProtoBuild, which is in the .NET Foundation, which is another way of doing builds, which is a bit more like CMake and things, where you build in one language, define it in one language, and then generate build scripts for all the other different languages, rather than it being a root orchestration language like Cake or Fake and things like that. So, yeah, it's good to have diversity. Also got to remember that there is a network effect, when once you start to get adoption, I don't know what it is about the internet, but the internet loves a monopoly. And I think it is because of the network effect, where once traffic starts coming to one place, kind of the momentum builds and builds and builds until it takes over. And so we do have to realize as well that there will be times where there is a network effect and there is one majority player, and that's fine. You know, that's okay.
Yeah, what I was going to say, the flip side of that is that as a beginner, sometimes it's easier if you get guidance on how to do something, and
it is.
You don't have the tyranny of choice, which can be actually
it can be paralyzing at times. Yeah, one of the things is interesting with choice. So let's take like Nancy, which, you know, which is awesome, and Nancy's really great simplified way of learning the web stack. And I actually find when you're teaching people the web, it's really, really good if you teach it rather than going straight from Hello World to ASP.NET MVC. If you go via Nancy, then I find that works really, really well. And from Nancy, you can also learn about Razor and, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And then if you can then show them ASP.NET MVC. And then that's not to say ASP.NET MVC is better than Nancy. They just do different things in different ways. And it's good to learn them both and, you know, pick the right tool for the job. But yeah, there is a tyranny of choice. And I come from the Java world where that definitely exists. So, you know, you have to, we'll have to see how it goes. More diversity won't hurt, let's put it that way. The most healthy ecosystems in nature are the most diverse ones, so let's up the diversity.
Oh, yeah. Then when you write tutorials, getting started videos or stuff like that, then you kind of present one way of doing things. Mm-hmm. But knowing that there is choice is always good.
Yeah.
Well, like with JSON parsing, you know, sometimes you want JSON.NET, sometimes you want something else, you know what I mean? It depends what you're going to be doing with it. And so you've it's good to have these different libraries around.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to have a stepping stone or at least a intermediary sort of a technology to get you started quickly and then deep diving and working out what you want. That's really good advice too.
But there's the problem of finding discoverability is a big problem. You know, where should I go? What libraries exist? And, you know, what's good for what? And I think NuGet's got a big role for us there as our packet manager and, you know, Fake and things like that, I guess, as well. But it's we've got to improve the discoverability a bit somehow. And, people who are interested in this also use this kind of thing and all those sorts of things. But, hey, we've got to get the basic services up and running first and scalable. And, you know, so we need to make sure we need to focus on that.
Yeah, so the package manager is actually interesting to talk about because it's the infrastructure that the ecosystem relies on, and all platforms have at least one dominant package manager. So for Node, it's NPM, but and for us, it's NuGet. But there are others. So for example, on .NET, there is Packet and even others. But that's delicate because in that particular case, it's important that there is one that is the standard, right? So how do you balance that need for diversity with the requirement to have a standard?
Yeah, and this is where the internet loves a monopoly, isn't it? Because of this network effect thing.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, having there's room for two or three because people just tend to register in both. If there's dozens, then it doesn't work. But with NuGet and Packet, I think that's fine. You know, within the Linux world, there are a number of, you know, root repositories where people register in, and you've got the RPM and the, you know, the Yum world and also the apt-get world as well. And they're different worlds, and people just go into both. So that's okay. And it depends on the ecosystem you're in and what tooling it supports, how you end up going into that catalog. So if you're from a Visual Studio world and you're doing C# development, then you're only going to ever see NuGet. But if you're in F# and you're doing command line, then you're going to see Packet, and that's fine. You know, the interesting problem is making sure that one of those that we have people making sure they know both exist, I guess, and the only way to do it is to talk about them. So that if you're a library developer over in, and you've registered your thing into NuGet, that you don't think you're done, that you know that other, you know that other package managers exist out there. So yeah, it's an interesting problem, one we're a long way from solving. But hey, as we get more and more diversity of solutions, I think it's the stuff we need to think about as a community.
Do you have any recent projects that joined the foundation you'd like to give a shout out?
Yeah, so as I say, Polly joined this week as we're recording the show. So Polly is a great. I tell you what, I don't even know how to share my screen using Hangout. I don't want to tempt fate by going a bit too crazy.
It's on the left. It's the one that is green. That's the screen
share. Oh yeah, here we go. Let's do this. Let's do this. So. Yeah, and what I might do actually is give you a sneak preview of the new .NET Foundation website if you want to. Would that be good?
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So let's make this full screen for people who are for people watching along on the stream. So Polly is a great project that's just joined recently. So if we go along and we'll jump along to the website, as I say, Polly is a good resilience framework. And it's used in quite a lot of things. I love the stickers and the logo, by the way. So, that's always important to have for your project. And
we know.
Yeah, we know. So you can't even have a good security vulnerability nowadays without a good logo. So, so as we come in here, if you want to... Dylan did a great post recently about describing, they just did a V5 release, and it talks about a lot of the things they have in terms of, they already had a circuit breaker pattern implementation, but in terms of having like timeout policies and fallback policies, as you're building, especially microservices that talk to each other, and you need to have mechanisms for dealing with resilience. You know, if my back-end service happens, then what happens? And Polly gives you a framework by which to build those. So it's really neat, and it's got some good stuff there. So, yeah, shout out to the Polly team. Let's see. Hang on a second. What's going on? I'll be back. There we go. Hopefully this is I'm trying to navigate in full screen mode. I shouldn't have bothered. Wait there. I'll just come out of that. That'll work better. Hello. There we go. Exit full screen. There we go. That'll do. Right. And then let's jump in. Okay. Let's see what another one we want to call out. The Cake team have been getting very, very active. So Cake is a cross-platform build language. So it allows you to do builds for different systems. So go do your APK build or your Android build, or go get your build ready for working on Linux and things and doing different types of stuff. There's integration into VSTS as well as Jenkins and TeamCity and AppBayer and all those sorts of things. So the key about Cake is it's a bit like Fake. It's a DSL for doing builds that's in C#, is how you get it. So when you're the build guy, as I always am, it seems on Teams, not nowadays, because now I've got this fancy title of executive director and I just seem to delete email and write PowerPoints nowadays. But in the old days, when I was a real developer, I seemed to always used to hang around build systems. Mm-hmm. And I'm fine with MS Build and, Python or whatever, or Perl even, for doing my build scripts. I quite enjoy collecting those languages. But quite often people in the team are a bit frightened of having to go into a different language to go do some build stuff. So being able to orchestrate the build using C# is quite useful. And by orchestrating the build, you still call out to MS Build to do compiling of things. It doesn't reinvent the wheel. This is a set of tasks and a set of sort of basic types that you can assemble together and use that to orchestrate your overall build and get that working and do deployment and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's also the recognition that sometimes a text format like XML is not necessarily going to be ideal when you have complex logic to implement in your build, which does happen sometimes.
Exactly. Especially once you start doing deployments and things and pushing out to different, you know, staging environments and blah, blah, blah. And you can do it in lots of different languages and lots of different ways. The problem is when you're not in the office and people are frightened to touch that build script, you know, and to mess with it. So if you can put it in a language that people understand, then hopefully it'll share that out a bit more. Chemistry add-in for Word we added in recently. That's basically a plugin into Microsoft Word that allows you to do chemistry diagrams if you want to, you know, which is pretty cool. So if you want to do the, you know, your, and this is useful for researchers who would, this is CML, chemistry markup language, and if you want to embed a picture of your, you know, your molecular diagram into your Word document when you're writing your report, do that. So that's cool. It's good to have a, that's written in .NET, obviously. Another one that's written in .NET, which you and I are physicists, Bertrand. Worldwide Telescope is a good one for me. It's one of my little pet projects.
That is just awesome.
Yeah. .NET, and it's just brilliant. They've got everything from, you know, you can go discover the world, discover the universe with it, and this is the software that powers a lot of observatories, what do you call them? The way you project onto the ceilings and it's all round. Planetariums, there we go. Yeah, software powers a lot of the planetariums, and it has all the logic in for having projectors with spherical projections overlapping and all the hardware that's in a planetarium, and it can do, you can record tours, so you can go and record a tour through the universe and then play it back and educate students. And in fact, the tour feature was used recently with, you remember we there was that announcement about Planet Nine, and they looked at the orbits of all the objects in the solar system, along with the objects in the Kuiper belt, and they're looking at it and they think, you know what, this would make a lot more sense if there's a planet about the 10 Earth's masses orbiting in the solar system that we haven't discovered yet. And they used Worldwide Telescope to produce all the videos, which were then on, you know, CNN and BBC and things, and that was all powered by opensource.net. How cool is that?
Yeah, it's very, very cool. And I love that project because it is both a true research tool that is used by scientists, and it is also doing the science popularization thing as well. And providing anyone in the world with some kind of virtual telescope that people can use. So it's like having the biggest telescope in the world on your computer. So it's fantastic.
And it's the real astronomical data that real research, you know, when I was doing astronomy, we had these laser discs, and then they became DVDs of plates of images from a sky survey that was done in 1950, and then the Hubble Space Telescope. And, you know, these were very, very expensive things that we used to have access to that we could then use to do science with. Now you can get access to those same data sets for free for everybody.
Yeah, and telescope time is a very precious resource for astronomers. And you basically get virtual telescope time for free now. So
yeah, it's fantastic. No, I love that project. And then there's a lot of others. I'd encourage you to just go to the .NET Foundation.org website and take a look at some of the projects. I mean, all the ones you would expect that are part of the core of .NET are there, you know, the core CLR and Roslyn and all those sorts of things. So
that I use every week. And there is, of course, Orchard CMS.
Orchard CMS as well, which the .NET Foundation website is built with. So there we go. There's a circular thing there. One of the things I was going to mention, there's a couple of projects which aren't in the foundation. Well, you know, we were talking about projects we talk to, you know, we work with. So one of the ones which is really interesting I've been working with lately is PI, and they're a PHP to IL compiler. So they take PHP code and compile it into IL, and the benchmarks they get are just insane. Like, so here's PHP 5.6, and here's it running under the CLR. It breaks the graphs.
Yeah. Believe it or not, we've had those guys twice on the show already.
Yeah, of course we have. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, exactly. But they're very smart guys, and it's just a cool project. And yeah, I think that's amazing. So yeah, that's good. And then there's, you know, other projects as well. But yeah, so that's good. Do you want a sneak preview of the new website? Is what we're doing and what's coming up?
Yeah.
So this is the new website for the Don Evan Nation as it's coming along now. So it's just, you know, looking pretty, and but it's all done using Orchard. One of the things that we're trying to encourage is we're trying to foster this user group community again, and trying to get people to, you know, publicize their local .NET user groups and go along to their local .NET user groups. So we're going to be doing quite a bit of work over here over the next year, probably trying to help people find their user groups and get to them and publicize them. So.
Yeah, and I will add one thing to that. So that's super good advice. You probably have a user group in your neighborhood, unless you live somewhere very remote. So participate in those events, become an actor in those. And if there isn't a user group where you live, create one.
Yep, exactly. And I'm going to try and, again, do create one now. Over the next 12 months or so, you know, over the next year, one of the things I want to do is just try and make it easier for people to help them create their own user groups, you know, and help provide some resources there. Right. But that's like longer term. For now, we're just trying to help people find their local user group. And also speak at your local user group, more importantly. Don't just go along. Go along for a few and lurk. But then just talk. You don't have to be a Scott Hanselman or a, you know, or a Damian Edwards to present. Go along and talk about what you've been working on in your local user group, because it's just interesting.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to give another piece of advice here, which is that if you go and visit a customer, for example, in some place someplace else. So what I do usually is that I try to find the local user group and I ask them if I could give a presentation there. So. For example, last time I went to Los Angeles to visit a customer, I also spoke at the local user group. And it's great. You get to meet people and,
And you're always welcome as well. You know, it's great to always go find a group of like-minded people who are just keen to learn and you learn something at every user group you go to. You Absolutely. Always learn something. So, yeah, go along, but also present. And this is how I got, this is how I got my job at Microsoft, was by speaking at my local user group. And that moved up over time and then ended up being a speaker and then became an MVP and then got my job at Microsoft. So, yep, that's
so
that.
How do you find your local user group?
Go to meetup.com is my best advice right now. Until we have a better system, which I'm hopefully going to try and build a directory of them and have like maps and things to help you find them, just go to meetup.com and do a search.
Okay.
And then also aggregating some community news here as well. And then, you know, a bunch of stuff about how to get involved with the projects and things. And then we're also pulling in some stats about the different projects. So this is the current live number of repositories in the .NET Foundation and how many forks there are. And we have 8,000 people near enough contributing to the .NET Foundation, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And then you can come in here, and then this is a list of popular repositories by Awesomeness, where Awesomeness is an algorithm I can give you a link to, but it's it helps show you the some awesome projects you might want to discover. For instance, Xamarin Forms is particularly awesome right now, as is Orleans. And then you can obviously search for the projects in the foundation. But if you want to come in here, the search is, again, it's using Orchard, and it's reasonably good. So say if I search for CMS, it'll show you the CMS projects in the .NET Foundation. So like Umbraco and Orchard, there we go. And you can go learn more about those. So that should be cool. And then some more information, you know, about how to join in, how to participate, how to get hold of some swag. If you want to get hold of a big stand-up .NET bot to put in your own office, then you can go along and do that. If you want to learn about...
Martin is the one who had those made.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're very cool. I didn't make them myself, but it's just awesome. I'm really pleased with that. So we're going to get used more, you know, if you want to learn more about who the .NET Foundation is and things like that. So, yeah, so it's all good. So that's coming along. That's all built in Orchard as well. So so it's all here. And one of these days, Bertrand, I want to take you through how the guys from Lombeek Software are building this with us and building this for us. It's all going to be open source, because Orchard's already open source, but our... our instance of it is also going to be open source when this releases, and they're helping us do that and put that together. So, you know, nice. A shout out to the Lombeat guys.
Yeah, actually, I should have them on the show.
Yeah, once we get this live, when this is finally live, let's get them on the show and get them to tell us what they've done. Because there is some, they've got some cool modules in here that they've built, like a, I'm jumping around on the screen. The aggregation of data into this community news section is a module that they've built, an open sourced, and that's now available.
They built some great stuff, but they also have a hosting service for Orchard websites
that does all the continuous deployment and all that sort of stuff. Yeah,
and they have a free option that can get you started. So yeah, they are doing a lot of very interesting stuff.
Cool. And then the other module they built for us as well is all this project data. That's actually pulled from, if I go to the .NET WAC home GitHub repo, it's pulled from this projects folder here. So if you wanted Bertrand to come in and update the description for Orchard, you just send a pull request to that markdown file. And then as soon as that pull request gets merged, then the website gets notified by a webhook, and then it updates on the website within Orchard. So it just all that sort of stuff. It's quite cool. So there we go.
Cool.
So, that's probably, I was trying to think if there's anything else around. There's just take along, explore. There's some cool projects. But more importantly, my goal, let me switch off screen sharing a second. My goal is that we... right now, if you look at the different programming languages and look at the levels of contribution that people are making into their relative ecosystems, then .NET's reasonably low, you know, depending on how you work out the number in terms of the percentage of .NET developers who are active on GitHub, say, contributing to open source projects. Whereas if you look at Rails, like 1 in 3 Rails developers are contributing to GitHub on different open source projects, and it's a lot lower for C#. So I want to try and double that. So, you know, regardless of if you're consuming, you know, regardless of if you're consuming open source or, you know, whatever, help you build your next project. But then if you find a problem with it, or then log a bug. If you go dig into the source code and see if you can start help fixing the source code, learn how to do a pull request in GitHub and start contributing back.
Yeah, and there are lots of different ways you can contribute to open source. Writing code is just one of many ways. Even filing a bug is a contribution. It's valuable.
It's a huge contribution.
Yeah, it is. It is, absolutely. Contributing to documentation, following the discussions and participating in the design discussions, that's another way you can contribute. Many, many, many different ways. So
even just...
tweeting about it. It's a way to enter a project, and then you can start doing more and more.
Exactly. And it's like I have job in the universe, because I get to spend my whole day just talking to people who are working on open source projects and contributing to open source projects. And I get to meet some like amazingly clever people. You know, you did a startup as well, Bertrand, like me. And it's probably in your mentality as well. I have this list. I keep a list in my head of people I want to work with at some point, because I've worked with them a little bit and they're awesome. And I think, right, next time I do a startup, I'm going to try and steal that person, you know, and try and work with them again, because they're amazing. I get to work with them and not pay them on these open source projects. Like, I get to work with people like Oren Novotny or Brendan Foster or Brad Wilson on, you know, who's on the XUnit project. I get to work with all these amazing, amazing .NET developers and talk to them and interact with them and learn so much from them every single day. It's just the best thing in the world. So yeah, go and contribute. It's brilliant.
Cool.
All right, I'm just checking if we had any questions coming in on the Twitter feeds or anything like that. I don't know.
Yeah, so I was looking at that.
I think we're good.
Yes, we're live, and yeah.
I quickly, just if we've got a few more minutes then, is it worth just explain some of the services that the foundation provides to its projects, just so people are aware of them? So we have, we have all the stuff a foundation provides. So there's, the code is now owned by a legal entity that's not Microsoft, that's somebody else, which is a good thing, you know, and it means, and we have things like the CLA systems in place. So if you want to be able to protect your code and be able to have, you know, certain levels of IP cleanliness, then we have all that. And we have .NET bot and the CLA bot that sit and listen to when people contribute. So if you send a pull request in, then it'll say, hey, can you sign my CLA, and automates that whole management of the project. What I like to describe is that I'm a PM for all of my open source projects in the foundation. You know, I try and do all the boring stuff that you don't want to be doing, you know, in your free time on an open source project. I try and take care of a lot of the boring stuff and allow you to focus on the code. So handling CLAs, all that sort of thing, we do all that. But also authentic code signing. Oren Novotny, speaking about Oren again, he built a code signing service for us where if you want to have authentic code signing of your nuggets as part of the as part of your SCI build process, then we have all that available so you can actually authentic code sign things. And that was critical for Open LiveWriter, is a project I'm personally involved in, which is, you know, LiveWriter, but the open source version. And we needed to authenticode sign that because that's an .exe file that people, that normal humans, you know, muggles go install on their desktops. And so we set up the code signing certificate for that, and that all works as well. Speaking of Open LiveWriter, the .NET Foundation is an approved company in the Windows Store, and we'll go get approved in other places if people need us. So if you're an open source application but want to go into something like the Windows Store or go into different stores, you know, like the Google Play Store or whatever, then we can, as a corporate entity, go get registered and go get developer keys and actually publish open source applications into those, where it's typically hard as an individual. Things like SSL certificates, you know, code signing certificates, DNS, all these sorts of technical services, getting access to Azure resources for builds, getting access to Office 365 for doing document sharing and emails, and access to software as well. You know, we're starting to build some partnerships with companies like Microsoft, and some others are coming along as well soon to if projects need access to software, then we have ways of, you know, nominating that they get access to free software to help them build their open source projects and things like that. So yeah, lots of those types of services. Basically, if there's something I can do to help you to be more successful to do open source .NET, that isn't, I don't have like a team of, I don't have a magic army of developers sat here in my cupboard. You know, this is it. So I can't provide lots of free engineers, and I can't provide lots of free money to go allow you to work on your project, you know, in your 100% of your time. We can't do that as a foundation. But if there's anything that I can do to help your project, then please get in touch. Martin@dotnetfoundation.org.
Excellent. So we do have a question on the chat here from Jaroslav. I hope I'm not butchering his name too much. Currently, project owners are asked to fill a private survey instead of opening an issue in public GitHub issue tracker. Are there any plans for making the process of joining .NET Foundation public?
That's a great idea, actually. I've been wrestling with that one. I think we probably should. The interesting, sometimes people want to make a big ta-da news thing about becoming part of the foundation. So it's trying to balance those two. So most foundations, it isn't open. You know, it is a private conversation you have with the project about joining, and then it's only open once it's been approved. And sometimes the conversation lasts a long time.
Yeah, but how do you get...
I personally would like that to be open. Sorry, Bertrand, what are you saying?
How do you get the conversation started? You just send email to martinwoodward@microsoft.com?
Martin@dotnetfoundation.org is one way, or contact. But there's also, if you go to the website and on the form, there's and on the new website as well as the old website, and the .net.home, there is a survey you fill in to express your interest, and then it basically just sends me an email, and then we work together on what's called an onboarding questionnaire, and we basically pull together all the information I need. And then the way that the process works is I pull together all the information about your project, have a conversation with you, figure out why you're thinking about joining the foundation, making sure, you know, is it for the right reasons? Are you ready as a project to join, you know, all that sort of thing. And then we put forward your proposal to join the .NET Foundation to the Advisory Council and the Technical Steering Group, which are two bodies we should probably talk about. And then they give advice to the board of directors, and then the board of directors decides if they want to take on a new project or not. Because every project is a little bit of extra work, not just for me, but for other people in the foundation. And, you know, there's risk associated with every project as well. We need to be able to stand behind that project and be able to help that project in times of need. And so we need to make sure we do our due diligence before we bring them in. But opening up is a great idea, and it's something I personally would like to do. I'm just trying to wrestle that with most of the times when I've done it. It's been a with existing communities, it's fine, because I actually encourage the community to go talk to the wider community about joining. But with the when it's companies bringing components to the .NET Foundation, then often that has to be a bit more private conversation, because they want to announce it at a big event. So we've got some coming at the minute, for example, that are different, you know, from some companies, and that will be announced at an event with a big ta-da, and we'll make press. And you can't do that when it's a public issue.
Let's say that I have an open source project, and I'm wondering if I should be in the foundation. What would be the set of criteria that I should evaluate before I submit it?
Yeah. So, what help do you need? You know, do you just need eyeballs and fingers on keyboard, or are you getting to the point now where you're trying to get some serious corporate adoption, and things like having a CLA in place would actually help get corporate, you know, large corporate entities consuming and contributing back to your project? Then that would be an example. Do you need access to resources that I can only provide if you're part of the foundation, like AuthentiCode signing, or, you know, one of those types of things, or if you want to be, you know, if you want to come under the umbrella of that corporate entity? The main things you have to accept when you come into the foundation, you have to be under a permissive open source license. It has to be under the same open source license to everybody. So I've had a few conversations with people where their business model is, say, GPL license, but then if you come to me and pay me a bunch of money, I'll give it to you under a different license. That's not allowed. It has to be under a permissive open source license to everybody. You know.
So no dual licensing?
Well, dual Apache and MIT would be fine, but what I'd want to positively discourage is somebody coming along with a restrictive license or a copyleft license like GPL v3, but you can pay for a commercial license. That's not what we want. We want people who are doing all the same permissive open source license in the foundation to everybody. Just make sure people have a good playing field. And I could have an argument with that project, and I often have a discussion with them about sustainability and about how they are deciding to do their particular project and have a business model around their project. And personally, I find that dual licensing model there's some issues with it in terms of sustainability to build up a community of people contributing to the project rather than it just being you contributing to that project under that model. So, okay. So there's that. And then the other thing you have to accept is to abide by the .NET Foundation Code of Conduct. So, you know, be nice to people and don't abuse them and don't hassle them and things. And we have that as well. So as part of coming on board with the project, you also have to accept the code of conduct, and you as a project maintainer will abide by the code of conduct as well as help enforce that within your community.
Cool.
There we go. We're about on the hour mark, unless there are any questions.
I don't see any new questions. I do have a couple of things to talk about before we leave that have nothing to do with the foundation. So yeah, unless you have any
no, that's me. Just contribute to your favorite open source project. Go see how you can help. That would be my call to action.
Yeah.
Awesome.
That's awesome. And I completely second that. Okay, so let's switch to announcements. So if you look at the blog this week, there is actually quite a lot in there. We have made a few announcements and published a few blog posts. So we have the .NET Core tooling in Visual Studio 15, and I have to do the air quotes here because they are actually part of the name. So that's a very interesting post to read if you're interested in what's going on with the build system in .NET. So give that a read if you haven't already. Give us comments and so on. That's the goal. We have announced an update for .NET Core 1.0. That is a very small update that only concerns people who have never installed .NET before on their Mac. So if you're not in that category, you can just forget about it. You won't get anything from it. So
is that the code signing? Is that all it was? Just the package signing, or was there more? Do you know?
It was I believe it was the path environment variable that wasn't properly set.
It was a few bug fixes. It's also available on a few more Linux operating systems.
No, that's the.
Is that what
yes, no, we're about? Not yet talking about that one. That's the next
oh,
one.
Oh, okay, my bad.
No, I was talking about the October update.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Sorry for if 1. It's 0. Confusing. Apparently, it's confusing even for us.
Sorry.
we're releasing too many things probably this week. I don't know. So there is also the preview one of .NET Core 1.1, which is the next minor version of .NET Core. It's a preview. So again, don't install that in production quite yet. It's for evaluation purposes if you want to see what's coming in the relatively short term for .NET Core. That one does have a fair number of additional APIs, but they're very technical, and many of them are actually for our own benefit to enable us to implement some scenarios. So yeah, there is a blog post. You can read it on the .NET blog if you're interested in knowing exactly what's in there. Mm-hmm. At the same time, ASP.NET and Entity Framework are releasing previews for their 1.1 versions. And those actually are more feature-rich than .NET Core itself. The ASP.NET Core preview has some interesting new middleware that is built in that is really worth checking out, and a few additional things having to do with tag helpers and so on. So yeah, check that one out. There is also a blog post on the ASP.NET blog that you can check out. I'll try to put all the links to all those in the description below. We also have a blog post about Entity Framework Core 1.1 Preview 1, and we also had Rohan Miller, who is the program manager for Entity Framework, on the show last week. So you can also check that out if you're interested in all those news. He made some demos specifically about this new version. That's it. Otherwise, there is the week in .NET as every week, so you can also check that out. And that's all I had for this week. Anything else?
No, I think we're good.
Excellent. And we are 4 past, so we can say bye-bye to everyone. And
thanks for
watching. See you again next week. Thanks again, bye. Martin, for being on the show. It's always a pleasure. And let us know if also that you can think of any good guests we should have on the show. We talked about Lombik. There are probably quite a few others. So, yep. All right. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye. See you next week.
Bye.
Where is my mouse?
There it is.